two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
John Morris, he is the voice of the Baylor Bears, kind enough to join us. John, how are you?
Hey, John.
Hey, doing great. How you guys doing today?
We're doing well. I remember we had the same kind of conversation last year before the season started, and we talked about some of the issues that Baylor dealt with and for that year, you know, that everybody was dealing with COVID, and certainly not the year Dave Aranda wanted. And he did not hesitate to make changes, and he did. And my goodness, the season you guys had last year was simply tremendous. What do you attribute that turnaround to?
Boy, pretty amazing, wasn't it? I guess last year when we were talking, Baylor was coming off a 2-7 COVID-riddled year and then go on, picked eighth in the Big 12 conference and go on to win the Big 12 and win the Sugar Bowl and win more games than Baylor's ever won in a season. It was the best season in Baylor football history last year, finishing 12-2, conference champs, Sugar Bowl champs. So I would attribute a large part of it to the change in offense. Coach Aranda did not shy away from making those changes on his staff and bringing in Jeff Grimes to install the wide zone offense, and Eric Mateos is our offensive line coach. You guys know and remember those guys. But that was a big part of it. I mean, even after 1 year, Coach Aranda knew that there had to be some pretty significant changes, and he made them, and gosh, did it work out really well for Baylor.
Early game against BYU this year, September 10th, second game of the year for Baylor, and you get this great rematch. They got to come to Lavelle Edwards Stadium, and I think that's going to be interesting. I'm curious, this Baylor Bear team, how much do they return and how much do they lose? And specifically, what type of high-level talent have they lost?
Yeah, good question, and looking forward to the trip out there. Please tell me it's going to be cooler there when we come your way on September 10th. It's got to be, right?
Can't really guarantee that.
It might be around the 80s, because I know that's an 8 o'clock kick, I believe, or an 8:30
sure.
kick. Probably going to be around in the mid-70s, 80s. It should be pretty good weather, don't you think?
Yeah, we'll take that. I mean, it our lows at night here are in the high 70s right now. So we'll take that for sure, and look forward to the trip out there. What a great game that was last year here in Waco. Great win for Baylor to get past BYU, and it was our homecoming game and a beautiful day weather-wise. So looking forward to the return trip. But to answer your question, what Baylor returns this year is, in my mind, the real strength of the team is both lines, offensive and defensive lines, return almost intact. And that's huge, you know, to have that experience and guys who are, you know, are really good and had really good years last year. Several could have left early for the NFL but opted to come back, like Connor Galvin, our starting left tackle. He was a Big 12 offensive lineman of the year, and he could have gone and been drafted pretty highly, but he opted to come back. So those guys are back. And then on the defensive side, Apu Ika, big nose tackle for us, he is back in his second year after transferring from LSU. He's the Big 12's I think defensive line preseason lineman of the year. So high expectations for him, but that's where you start as far as returnees for Baylor. Pretty much intact, both lines. Now, the skill players, there's going to be a lot of new faces. We'll have a new starting quarterback, and then a couple of our linebackers, Jalen Petrie and Terrell Bernard, are gone off to the pros also in on defense. So, you know, some significant losses, but really a lot of returnees in key positions for Baylor this year.
I wanted to talk just a little bit more. You mentioned, I don't know how you said his first name, but I know Ika. I thought, mm-hmm. Is it Siaki Ika? How do you say his name?
Yep, Siaki. Siaki is his given name. Siaki, and nickname is Apu. So we usually go Apu Ika.
Okay, and I was just watching some film. I actually retweeted some film on him yesterday because
yeah,
it was just showing some different practice videos and then some game videos. He looks to be one of the best nose tackles in the country, not just in that conference, but one of the best in the country, right?
I think so. I don't know if I would, you know, boldly make that statement, but boy, he is really good and just clogs up that middle, usually occupies a couple of offensive linemen. You know, you have to devote a couple of guys to him, and that should open up, you know, an end or two, you know, to get to the quarterback or get to the running back there. So I think he is really good. And I just think last year was his first year with us after transferring from LSU. And I really think that he can be better this year. I think, you know, just more comfortable here. And he's got a lot of good guys around him. He doesn't have to do it all himself. So I think he could be pretty dominant in that defensive front.
So I want to go back to the quarterback play. Were you just kind of walk us through the Gary Bohannon situation? He's now with, I believe, South Florida. How that played out and what that position looks like going into this season?
Yeah, good question. You know, there was a pretty good quarterback battle, competition, let's say, between Gary Bohannon, who was the starter the majority of last year. He went out with a hamstring injury late in the season, was replaced by Blake Chapin, his backup. Blake came in and did really good things, started a couple of games late, and then hurt his shoulder in the Big 12 championship game. And so Gary Bohannon was back and started the Sugar Bowl game for Baylor. So both guys had their moments last year. Bohannon was the starter for the most part of the year. And Coach Aranda just said that there'd be, you know, competition with both of those guys through the spring, and said he would announce a starter at the end of spring. And everybody says, no, don't do that, because these days it's so easy to transfer. You know, thought that whoever didn't get the starting job would probably leave, probably transfer. And Coach Aranda said, I understand that, but I need to be fair to these guys. And the most fair thing to do is tell them who the starter is going to be. And he did that. And he named Blake Chapin the starter. And Gary Bohannon transferred out to, like you said, University of South Florida. So Gary is there and looks like he'll be the starter there. And I hope he does well. And Blake Chapin, as I watch practice, is doing really, really well as our starting quarterback. So that's the way it played out. Chapin doesn't have a lot of experience. Two games starting last year, that's it. But I think he's really talented, can run if he needs to, has a really good arm. So that's our guy, Blake Chapin, the starting quarterback.
Well, I'm sure this doesn't mean a lot to you, but with what Bohannon did to BYU yesterday or last year with 231 yards and I think one or two touchdowns, if I remember right, and then some yards on the ground. I don't know if you know, but BYU opens up against South Florida. So, they're
right.
Not going to be able to. Yeah, they're opening up with South Florida, so they're not going to be able to avoid him.
That's funny. I hadn't noticed that. So you'll see Bohannon and Chapin in the first 2 weeks of the year.
So overall, Dave Aranda, and we got to know Dave a little bit when he was the defensive coordinator at Utah State with Gary Anderson, and went with him to Wisconsin. Such a unique individual, really interesting person. And I was really concerned, honestly, because there's these guys that are great lieutenants, and sometimes they don't make great generals. And I was really curious to know if Dave Aranda was going to be able to make that next step from being an elite-level defensive coordinator at the college football ranks and take that next step and be an elite-level Power 5 head football coach. And I think the sign of a good leader is knowing when you've made mistakes or you need to make hard decisions and make changes, to being able to have those difficult conversations and make those moves. He did that after year one, and boy, I tell you what, my respect for him has just absolutely grown, because that was not an easy thing to do, I'm sure, and he got it done, and now he's reaping the rewards of it.
Yeah, that's really good observation on your part, you know, as far as would he make a good head coach, because he had done so well as a defensive coordinator at those other stops, but this was his first head coaching job here at Baylor. And then you come in under those circumstances, you know, with COVID and no spring practice, and he's meeting players over Zoom and meeting their families over Zoom, and, you know, just can't get face to face with them. That's a tough first year for any coach. But Dave went through that, handled it well, and it was kind of like a mulligan year or year zero for him. And then he did learn from that, and like we talked about, made those changes on his staff coming out of that season that paid off and paid big dividends going into year two, which was the 12-2 season last year.
John, I was excited to catch up with you today because we've got a lot of other things that are going on in the world of college football. And we saw the Big Ten and ESPN negotiations fall apart yesterday. And it's announced that they'll be going their opposite ways after many, many years together. I think everybody here in the state of Utah who's listening to this show right now has a great interest in BYU's advancement into the Big 12 and interest in what the Big 12 is like without Texas and Oklahoma. So as you kind of see the horizon and what you're seeing in negotiations and what you see with adding BYU, Houston, Cincinnati, and Central Florida, I'm just curious where you feel like the Big 12 is in positionally in an effort to be able to negotiate with the TV partners that are out there.
Sure. You know, it's a little bit above my pay grade. You might be surprised to know that Mac Rhodes doesn't walk down and get my opinion on these things, but we do watch with great interest. And I noticed that also about the Big Ten, that ESPN, you know, will not be a part of that. What does that mean for us, for the Big 12? You know, does that open up a bigger avenue for the Big 12 and ESPN to work together? Maybe, but who knows? I do think this. I think the Big 12 is in a position of strength this year compared to a position of almost not falling apart, but really needing to do some things drastically last year. You know, from last year to this year, when the announcement was made, Texas and OU were leaving. Oh, no, what's going to happen next? But really give our commissioner at the time, Bob Bowlesby, a lot of credit, who went out and identified those schools, those four schools you mentioned, including BYU, and brought them in. And that really stabilized our league. And now, to the point that this year, I think we are very stable and in a position of strength moving forward, whether that's adding some more teams. And I think there might be there probably will be some more movement coming and more shifting, more realignment. I don't know what that means exactly, but there's more coming. And I'm glad BYU is a part of our league, looking forward to that. And we're just in a much more stable, much more position of strength this year than we were a year ago.
A lot of conversations about NIL and collectives and things like that. What are some of the, and again, if you're not comfortable talking about it in your position, but sure, are there programs being set up in Baylor? We've heard about Texas Tech, and if there have been at Baylor, I just haven't noticed, but are there also similar programs being set up at Baylor to provide a little extra incentive for these players?
Yeah, there are, and to be honest, you know, I don't know the details of it. It is nothing across the board like some of these other schools have, and I'm sure you guys saw, you know, SMU the other day made an announcement about a collective that was going to give $36,000 to every football and basketball player. You know, we don't have anything like that in place right now. But I think things are happening in a positive way behind the scenes. And we've got great boosters. We've got great supporters here at Baylor. And it's going to be fun to watch, you know, to see how that moves forward in the days and years to come. So we don't have anything huge like that in place right now, but we're associated with Open Doors, if you've seen that. So that gets the ball rolling in a positive way. And I think we'll be fine. You know, I think we'll be able to maybe compete in the right word, you know, in that area. But I think you have to be competitive in that area these days. And I think Baylor will pull their own weight there.
John, do you still feel like BYU will be a part of that conference with Texas and Oklahoma for those two seasons? Or do you feel like they're going to work out something and Texas and Oklahoma will go on their way before BYU and the other three enter?
Yeah, boy, that's a huge question, and I really don't know. Something that got my attention at the Big 12 Media Days, you know, Brett Yormark is the new commissioner of the Big 12, and he was introduced, and it was his, you know, the opening day of the Big 12 Media Days, I think it was July 13th in Arlington, and one of the things he said, obviously he was asked about that, you know, the timetable for Texas and Oklahoma and when they might move out. And he said something about, you know, his main concern is the strength and the solidarity of the Big 12. And he said, I think we can make it a win-win situation is what he said. And that kind of, my ears kind of perked up when he said that, because to me that means a win for the Big 12. And he's referring to a win for Texas and OU also. So that to me says that maybe they're open to negotiating something, some kind of early release for those two. Big 12 is going to hold their feet to the fire. You know, there's a huge buyout if they want to leave before 2025, but maybe there is something that they can come to an agreement on that is a win-win for both sides. So I say all that to say, I don't know. You know, the answer to that, I know you guys are coming in next year, less than a year from now, Brigham Young is. And the four new schools, if nothing else, we'll have a couple of years with the 14 schools. But I would just guess that something might happen where Texas and OU are gone before 2025.
What's your early impression on the new commissioner?
Really good, really different, out of the box hire, which we probably needed. You know, it's just not a traditional kind of higher climate that we're in right now. You know, I love Bob Bowlsby. He did really great things for us, and not the least of which we're lining up these four schools that are coming into the Big 12 next year. He did great things there, but it was time to do something out of the box, and that not only with media rights, but just a different way of thinking. And this guy, we heard him there. We had a couple of interviews with him one-on-one at the Big 12 Media Days, and he impresses me as somebody that is very much outside the box and very much thinks outside the box. So I think it's going to be really, really good. I think those who identified him and hired him, and our president, Linda Livingstone, was on that search committee. She just raves about him, you know, and she would know because she knew the other candidates. So I'm kind of taking my cue from her, and I think it's a great hire, and I think it puts us in a great position moving forward.
Well, John, I'm excited about this one because I feel like this early matchup, week two for both BYU and Baylor, is going to be a matchup of two teams that I believe are going to be finishing in the top 25 when all things are said and done. So I think this is going to have really huge ramifications for how these seasons play out. I think a win either way is going to be huge for these two programs. Can't wait to see this game.
Well, we're looking for the forward to the trip out there. I said maybe we should come out on Monday, you know, get away from our weather here.
Well, John, we'll
spend
have some
time to get to.
Yeah, we'll have some studio set up for you. Well, whatever you need,
yeah,
man.
I appreciate
you need to get out of here early.
Hey,
we got your back.
That is good to know. That is good to know. But we'll probably come on Friday, and we look forward to it. And it is a big game, you know, early in the season, big game. And like I said, it was a huge win for Baylor to get past BYU last year here in Waco. So we look forward to the return trip.
Appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
Hey, you guys are great. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, and we will talk to you down the road.
Thanks, John.
John Morris.
Thank you.
Voice of the Baylor Bears.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.